Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and we're going to jump right into it today because this week I have a very wonderful guest on the show. Once again, joining me in studio, which isn't true, it's over Zoom, the man who brings you all the Berenstain Bears goodness, Mr. Michael Berenstain, Mike Berenstain himself. Let's all welcome him to the show. What's the delightful image behind you?
That I thought you'd be interested in. That's a big poster.
Uh-huh.
Based, I believe, and it's dated, fortunately. I think it was used to pitch the CBS Saturday morning show.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Visual aid for the initial, an actual TV show pitch.
Yes. I remember seeing the booklet your parents did, the book your parents put together when they originally pitched, I think it was called like the Berenstain Bears like Country Playhouse or something. It was an old television pitch that they had done, and they put together this massive book of clips and concepts.
There was a lot of different incarnations of different ideas for TV shows and things. Yeah. And that was one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess now it's all done just in Zoom meetings.
Yes.
Yeah. not as much showmanship required as it used to be.
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, maybe if you're an insider in that world, maybe there's a lot of personal pitching. I have no idea.
Right. So thanks for coming on the show again.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking me. And yeah.
Yeah, there's relatively a lot of scuttlebutt going on around in the Berenstain Bears collectors groups because of the updates that have been occurring to some of the classic books.
Yeah. That's been an interesting development over the past few years. Yeah.
And, you know, some people are thrilled at, the fact that this is a sort of living form of storytelling. Like, these books have never lost their relevance. And in order to stay relevant, they need to be, updated for modern times. And some people are a little cheesed about it because they see it as some kind of, altering a classic.
You're talking about the Christmas book, maybe.
The Christmas book, the camping book was a big one.
Oh, well, I'll be very frank about that. That derived from the great debacle with the Seuss books being taken out of print.
Okay.
You recall that?
Oh, yeah.
Racist or racial imagery in it. They're not, they're offensive. Were taken, just taken out of print by the Geisel estate. That really was something that publishers took very seriously, especially Random House. They had took those books out of print. So they and I decided that we were going to review all the old Bear books for imagery that or content that could be looked at as objectionable in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Removed it, changed it. And that's why.
Well, no, I mean, I understand that totally. I also was talking with a friend about it because I was like, the purpose of the first time books were always to address a child's first experience doing something. And a child who's going off to camp these days simply wouldn't encounter.
Exactly.
There was a time when most camps were named sort of these pseudo Native American things, and they had a lot of Native American.
My kids went to such camps. Yeah. I mean, and everybody. Did.
Right.
Yeah. That was a tradition. It was universal.
And that just doesn't exist anymore. So a child going off to camp for the first time wouldn't encounter. It seems very anachronistic now.
It is. And there are a lot of things in the book. I mean, obviously, the first Berenstain Bear books was over 60 years ago.
Right.
And even the first time books, they came out in the first ones were, well, if you go back to the very first 8x8 square books, they were the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And the camp book, I think, was one of the very early ones, maybe around, I don't remember, early 80s, around 1980, maybe. That's a long time ago. And, things have changed. And so I think that there's a lot of things. We've updated other language, not imagery, but other language in some of the books, just like references to technology, TV,
right,
and radios and things that Like there's a line in the Too Much TV about that they finally went from black and white to color. I mean,
Right.
what is that? Is a modern child even going to know what that refers to? So we
Right.
got rid of that. We made some other reference about TV and that, you know, the things.
I find that interesting because, I remember when they updated a lot of the images and references in Richard Scarry books, the Busy Town books, Cars and Trucks and Things That Go, things like that. And there was some vocal people who were like, why mess with a classic? But then I remember seeing it as, well, these are meant to be relevant to children. Like, they're not meant to be relevant to people who are just basking in their childhoods. And if you want a kid to appreciate a book today, it needs to be relevant to a child
And
today.
also, anybody who wants the original content, there are millions of those books.
Right,
You can get one, believe me,
right,
for a couple of cents. You know, they're not expensive. They're not rare. These are not like rare collector's editions. Like the Camp Book, they published like 5 million of them
Oh,
in their
yeah.
form. They're going to be around. You can find it.
So I have a question about the updating in that. That's the one that sticks out to me a lot because there's
That's the
the.
only one we've changed the artwork in.
How was that process accomplished? Because it's fairly seamless. It looks great.
The digital age, you know. I mean, yeah, I simply did a new image without, I don't think I had any background on these new images. They just were outlined, new character images. And the digital magicians at the publishers, they blended it in.
Yeah, because it, I mean, it looks fantastic. I thought that the changes were great. I mean, great. I covered that book. It had to have been 10 years ago now, and the guy I had on that episode was talking a lot about, his, because he was a guy who did a lot of camp, ran a lot of camps for kids. And it's just incredible to me that when I covered that book a decade ago, it still was relevant. And now today it's a completely different world than we were in even a decade ago. So what other books have been updated?
The Bully Book, we totally changed a lot of the
That's
text.
right. That's right.
Because, that book was bizarre even when it was published, frankly. And that was published when I was an adult, professional person involved with publishing. And I remember at the time, and I had nothing, was not involved in creating it, but I was, back and forth with my parents, was aware of what they were doing, but I wasn't working on it. And when they published it and I saw the finished version, I thought the content was bizarre. It was based on not only not what things were like when I was a kid growing up in the 50s, it was based on what things were like when my parents were growing up in the 1920s. And it was literally based on experiences my father had being bullied in the 1920s and how he dealt with it by learning to box and punching people. Because that was, I mean, you've seen the old Our Gang comedies where people are the kids, savages attacking and killing. That was the real world of Depression era city 1920s schools. I mean, kids were just, they were left out there. Well, the scenes in The Christmas Story, what's the great author's name who I'm blocking on, the great radio who wrote
Gene Shepherd.
who I used to listen to on the radio as a kid. But anyway, that was really what that world was like. And my dad would tell me stories about it. And he got bullied and beat up, and he dealt with it by taking boxing lessons and punching people. And so that's what he put in this book and published it in the 1980s. I mean, it wasn't even like that in the 1950s, believe me. Now, of course, it was completely crazy. So I told grandma, we got to change this. So we didn't change the illustrations. We just changed the text. And it still, I think, has some weird aspects to it, but it's not out of the 1920s.
I mean, it's the only Berenstain Bears book where we really get to see one of the cubs draw blood. And so I think it has its place in Berenstain Bears history.
I think it has, once we took out the weird stuff about like the school and the parents and not involved at all, just whatever you're going to do to yourselves, do it, and then you're going to get in trouble. Once you do it, then you're in trouble, and that's all our involvement. Once we took that out, I think it actually has, it's funny and it's cute and it has a lot going for it once
Yeah.
it's awkwardly revised.
It's some
And
great brother.
the illustrations that are, I think, are hilariously, wonderfully funny. So.
Oh yeah, and it's some great brother sister bonding. I can see why PBS, why Nelvana didn't want to do an adaptation of that specific story. So what is happening currently in the world? You just put out one of my favorite Berenstain Bear science books, brand new.
Yeah, I'm glad you like that because that was a kind of a pet project of mine. I really wanted to do that, and I kind of tricked HarperCollins into doing it. They wanted to do a different book, and I switcheroo on them, and they went for it. So that's a book I've been wanting to do for years and proposing in various forms, and nobody wanted to do it because it's this nerdy idea, and they think, well, nobody's going to want that—a book about astronomy. It's cosmology from the Berenstain Bears.
Yeah. I was actually going over to my head this morning and I was like, I think it's the most intense young reader's book of cosmology that I've
Oh,
not many kids' books are like, let's go to the edge of the universe.
well, the edge of the universe is an interesting place.
Yeah.
I learned a lot about it because not only have I always been interested in science and read a lot about science, but I had a buddy, a guy who was we were our kids were friends, so we the families were very close, and he was a guy involved with pharmaceuticals. He was a pharmaceutical executive, but his passion was astronomy. He was an amateur astronomer with telescopes and learning spherical trigonometry, and that's the kind of guy he was. And he wanted to go on astronomy adventures, going like to observatories and things out around the country. And nobody would go with him because nobody wanted to do that. So he enlisted me because at least I was interested in the subject. So I actually got a lot, learned a lot about this from actually going on these trips with this guy because I felt sorry for him. He had no pal to go on astronomy courses with it. Like we went to Kitt's Peak and things like that. It was really fascinating.
Well, it's always been a thing of yours. You've always been fascinated by science. I mean, you were the dinosaur guy, and I was very excited to see a book that dealt scientifically with things like quasars and exoplanets and the notion that there's more out there besides, my very educated mother just served us nine pieces. Like that's the extent that a lot of children's astronomy goes. And I'm like, no, there's a wild universe. And to tickle that inquisitiveness in kids and the notion that you can watch a science fiction movie that's not really based in science, but use that as a springboard to talk about real
I think
science.
that's really often how things like that work. I mean, I remember learning, reading science fiction and then wondering about things like reading. I mean, old when I was older, Ray Bradbury and things like that, and how real is this, or H.G. Wells, or any of that stuff. How you read the Time Machine when you're. I read it probably when I was 12, and really struck by it, was fascinated by it.
Yeah.
And when he worked with all this time travel and fourth dimensional stuff, and it gets you interested. And of course, he was a scientifically informed person, and in his own day and own era, he was very advanced and very, very knowledgeable. So it wasn't just made up nonsense.
No, and even the stuff that is a little made up, like it fosters this you question what is possible or what could be possible. I think of like, Tintin going to the moon. It's not the most scientifically accurate story, but it got a lot of kids.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of good research in that. I remember there's a whole section where they're talking about how nuclear reactions work in a reactor, and talking about the control rods being inserted and the neutrons being moderated. I mean, this was real science. And how they dealt with it, because it sounds very boring. I remember this professor of calculus that we in the English version talking to Captain Haddock. And Captain Haddock is basically making sarcastic comments about how boring what he's saying is. So it's a very clever, amusing way to present this scientific subject of the interaction of the two characters.
I don't think Captain Haddock has any room to really complain about a person. He was for being the violent drunk that he was.
Yeah, he's a great character.
He's a great character.
I really see, you know how in the English version books, he's always saying like 10,000 thunders or some nonsense like that. That's his.
Right.
I recently learned that in the French, original French version, what he says is tonnerre de Brest, means thunder of Brest, the city.
Oh.
And I thought, what in the world is that? It turns out it's in French, an old French expression, a seafarer's expression, meaning the cannons of Brest going off. That the fort in the city of the port of Brest had cannons, and they would fire salutes, and so it got to be a French sailor's expression, the thunder of.
Probably a reference that needed to be updated for the translation.
Well, it's also it's not something that would be understood outside Francophone
Right.
world,
I really got into the Tintin books thanks to a friend in high school who introduced me to them. But what's funny is the first Tintin work I ever read was there was a novel that was written by Frederick Chutin, Tintin. I think Tintin and then it was Tintin in the New World.
Well,
Excuse me.
there was a car, you know, a comic version
Oh yeah.
yeah.
But this weird novel
American gangster.
about Tintin as an adult that I had no
I didn't know about
I had
that.
no
But it's a
concept.
fan fiction, so in fact.
Yeah, and I was like, well, this is fascinating, but I don't know who this Tintin guy is. So I read, then I went back to the books and just then I just sort of delved into the history of like that art style and how it influenced like artists the world over. And
The origin of graphic novels, really.
yeah, and just Belgian art, and I don't know, I find that whole world, the influence of one artist on another and just how it sort of like dominoes throughout history.
No, Elgay is an important influence in popular art and basic, really, modern popular art.
Yeah. So besides the astronomy book, what are you, because that obviously you came up with that a couple of years ago and now it's hit the shelves. What else is out there in the world of the Berenstain Bears? What's happening in the world of the Berenstain Bears?
Well, the biggest thing that I think that, you know, bear history fans will be interested in is the too loose, too tight, just right, which I know most of your audience is audio, but so I can show you some things if you want. I called some.
That's great.
Okay. I will show you.
For those of you listening along at home,
Yeah,
you're
sorry
going to
about
miss
that.
out.
Yeah. Does this come up okay?
That's great.
This is I found a file in the basement. I remember having seen it years ago, but I didn't really think about it much. And what you have is that's a cover design, and then there was a bunch of little sketches, little small thumbnail sketches of a book. This was one of the first, I believe, what I've figured out is that it's one of the very first bright and early books. The first bright and early books were done by Geisel and my parents in, it came out, I think, 1969 or 70, I think. And the first batch, there were four of them. And I think they were like, you know, one fish, two fish. There was some classic, maybe Hop on Pop. And then the first Berenstain Bear one that came out in that initial batch was Inside Outside Upside Down. And then I gather that they immediately started working on another one, which became Old Hat, New Hat.
I was just going to say, because that ends with too loose, too tight.
And what this is an earlier version, sort of the Old Hat, New Hat that never got published. And it actually, I think it morphed into two books because it's about, it has a lot of scenes about winter activities, you know, snowmen and things. And I think it morphed into two books, Old Hat, New Hat. It took that too loose, too tight element and developed it into a book just about hats, which was the second bright and early book they published, and also The Bear's Christmas.
Yeah.
A lot of the snow, which was published at that time, 1970. So I think this is actually a precursor of those two books. But I think it stand when I showed it when I found it and showed it to people at Random House, and they said, "Yeah, this stands alone as a an unknown, never published classic Berenstain Bear bright and early book." So we've developed it into a new book with fully finished art. I'll show you some of the again, if you don't mind. What we initially did was mock it up in a full size, like you'd have in blew up illustrations and made it into a full sign. And then we've done finished artwork based on it, new artwork. And
Oh, hey. And you've really stuck with the
Yes, that was something we all decided. And it also will have an introduction from me describing the history of it and its origins.
Oh, fantastic.
Interesting, historically accurate book, which is what I had wanted to do with the Meet Big Paw book that Random House did, but they didn't want to do that. So that's just, you just have to figure that out. You could look on our website and figure out the art
Yeah.
book. But that was the beginning of this reviving old books, was the art I found that was for the television show for Big Paw.
So as an artist, as someone who's been drawing the Berenstain Bears for so long now, what was it like having to adapt your style to an older style?
It was fun because I actually like the older style better, frankly, to be honest. So it was a lot of fun.
Did you have much experience drawing the bears in that style, or was this something new you had to?
No, I had to work on that. But it was actually, I think it's actually easier because they're so exaggerated. It's easier to do wild, crazy, exaggerated art than more controlled, refined, careful art, which is the modern bears.
Right. I assume the more controlled art is easier to like throw on a character sheet and show to a.
Yeah, because that's really was a lot of the origin of the modern style was the fact that it had to be simplified and regularized and made uniform for animation.
Yeah.
The mid 80s. That's really when the modern style, the standardized Berenstain Bears style was established so that the books would conform to the more to the look of the characters on animation. So there would be a uniform kind of brand style rather than all these varying looks that had evolved over the years.
So when can we look forward to seeing that book on shelves?
That's a good question. Hang on, let's see if I can look at the chart. I have a chart, which I don't really have at hand. It's probably about a year from now.
Probably about a year.
Well, it'll be Christmas. It'll be, since it's a winter subject, it'll come out next fall, I think. Yeah.
Fantastic. I look forward to it. Are there any other books in this style on the horizon? Like, are you looking at more?
Yes. Another thing we found in the files, and I say we because the Random House people actually came here to the studio and went through the files.
Oh, wow.
They were interested in the whole idea of doing that, which I initially, you know, we talk about pitching. That was something this concept of going back and finding these things that had never been developed, that were originally developed for Random House, but never published. And they were very interested in that idea. So they wanted to come and look through, actually see all the material. And we went through the files and looked at things. And one of the things I had found was a book, and I don't really know exactly when it was done, I think probably 80s, called I Am a Member of the Berenstain Bear Family. And it's a book for kids as their book saying, I am a member of the Berenstain Bear Family. And it just introduced, it's a very simple, young, pretty, there was a full color sketch version. It was not a conventional book in that it was very short. It wasn't even fully, I mean, most children's books are usually at least 24 pages. Because of the way children's books are manufactured. This is only about, you know, a dozen pages. I wondered if it maybe has been something originally intended as a gift book, maybe for Hallmark or some other. I don't even know if it was developed as a conventional book, but it was really cute and charming. And they loved it. And so gradually they decided that we're going to expand it and develop it and adapt it for the first Berenstain Bear Little Golden Book, which I always wanted to have. Bears in the Little Golden Book family because it's such a classic. They were my favorite books as a kid, little kid, and I always thought that would be perfect for the bears. So I'm very pleased that that's going to happen. But we haven't even started on that yet, so that'll probably won't be out for a couple of years.
I know that the little gold are is it, are you going to is it going to try to look more like a classic Little Golden Book, like art style, or are you going to stick with the?
I think so because the style of the color work that we found in these sketches, which actually my mother did, was in a very soft, pretty watercolor style. That's why I think it may have been intended as a gift book rather than in one of their standard series of books, because it's very pretty, very, very almost kind of floral looking with a lot of, you know, almost greeting card qualities to it. And so I think we're going to try to stay with that look. Yeah.
Now, when you say that, like, so if Random House comes to your to the archives and start and go and you all look through this. When you say Random House, do they have is there like a couple of people at Random House who are the ones who are like, we're the ones who are interested in getting this project off the ground? Like, how does that work?
Well, these publishers, of course, are very large.
Yeah.
They're all big publishers, so they have many different subdivisions. And even within like Random House children's books, there's a lot of different subsections. And there's a subsection which I don't even know technically what its label, its moniker is. Brand publishing or something. Maybe it's something like that. Where it's lines of books based on certain characters, and there's a group of people who that's their specialty. There's a publisher of the division, editor in chief who I'm working with, art director, designers, and so there's like a little Bear team that's assigned Bear books, and that's who came and we went over these things with.
And these people are like, there's an interest now in, reviving older works. Yeah, there's
That's
like a
something
nostalgia.
they really like that idea, and I guess it's working from a publishing point of view, so we're pursuing it.
Yeah, no, I think it's
Well,
great.
the origin of the Baby Berenstain Bear books, as I think I mentioned to you, is originally it was just they were interested in maybe just republishing the old out of print original board books,
Right.
but then gradually realized that they were had a lot of issues. The subject matter was good, and they had cute aspects to them, but they were. They didn't want to just reissue them. They needed, and so this whole new series with a new basic same subject matter, same intent, but using the actual family characters and new content. So
Yeah.
that originally developed from looking at old content like that.
Yeah. And finally giving like Honey her own line, giving
Yes, which I think is that's one of the reasons that my parents and Random House wanted to introduce Honey was to make a character who could be directed toward books for very young children, sense. And so finally, that's coming more to fruition, which is.
It only took 25 years.
That's all. That's just a flash in time, a shutter snap in the grand scheme of time, as we
Yes.
learn from the Leap to the Stars book.
Right, we couldn't get to the Andromeda Galaxy in that amount of time, so
You couldn't get any.
no. And we all know you can't hit the speed of light because it would compress time too much and you'd never actually
I
get
think
anywhere.
if you went to speed of sight, you would be the size of the universe or something like
Right. It's
that.
impossible
Space
to.
expands at the velocity, so you become as big as the universe if you went
Right.
something like
A little heady for a children's book at this
that. Yeah, I
point.
didn't get into that.
Right.
And I also didn't get into the really complicated issue, and I thought, how do I even, I just didn't address it. I did it with that wedge-shaped diagram of the known universe. Because obviously what you're doing is you're looking back in time as you look down through that wedge.
Right.
And the quasars are not really just far away, they're far back time. And so you can't see what's happening that far away now. Well, you can see.
Right.
I didn't get into
No. I think you blow too many minds. I
But
think too many.
it makes my our minds explode. So
I can't remember who it, what it is. There's some book where the person talks about how like when they were a kid and they were told that stars die, it like just completely just destroyed the way they saw the entire world, like universe. Like it's just that's a lot for a child to take in.
I don't think she's. I just don't think that's something that's relevant for people to worry about.
Right.
The whole idea that about how big the universe is makes me seem small. I always thought that's a very arrogant point of view. Because what did you how big does something have to be to make you feel small?
Small.
I mean, you look at Niagara Falls, it makes you feel small. But what some to me when somebody's saying the universe makes you feel small, it's maybe saying the Himalayas don't make me feel small. So I just. Out of a weird point of view.
I get on a I go to the grocery store and I feel small. I'm like, oh,
That's
this
my
world
problem.
is much bigger than I
I look out the window, I feel small. So why do you need the universe to make
Right.
you
I
small
talk to my
unless you
boss.
really have a very inflated point of view of about yourself in the first place?
Well, I think it's I think yeah, joking aside, I think you bring in an interesting point. It is so valuable in children's literature to take children and just say, look how big the universe is. Look how big the world is. Look how much exists outside your window, outside your point of view. I mean, there's so much more to look at than you even know. And that's to me the basis of
Yeah,
science.
and of
That's
course, children, like early people, early humanity, they look around the world and they see it from a very kind of flat perspective. Everything looks close, or things look far away in perspective of, you're standing on the ground looking at something a mile away. That's far away. And there's no way of having a scale of astronomical things. Like little kids are always saying, when you're in a car driving at night, they say, "Why is the moon following us?"
Yeah.
Because they'd have no idea of the scale. And I always remember with my kids, I try to say, and I think it worked. I say, "It's because it's very, 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 very far away." And they say, "Huh?" And I say, "Well, think about it. If you walk past something close, it doesn't look like it's following you. But then look at something, far away, like in the next neighborhood, it'll look like it's keeping up with you. Well, the moon's so far away that it looks like it's always in the same place." And I don't think they really understood it, but it made them realize that, hell, there's something, scale is why this is happening.
Yeah. Scale is one of those hard things.
It's not because the moon is following you. It's because it's just very, very far away.
I think I brought it up in the episode where I was like, if you want, like, trying to build a scale model of the solar system takes like an entire city because you just don't understand how far away everything is. You can make us, if the sun is.
And I realize we're just talking about astronomy and cosmology here, which is really not the point of your broadcast, but what the hell.
Usually.
There's a wonderful video which I recommend you find, some British astronomer who wants to give the scale of the distance between the sun and the next star. And what he does is he gets, I think he has a ping pong ball, and he puts it down in the middle of a football pitch in
Yeah.
England. And then he gets in his car and he starts to drive. And he drives, and then they speed it up, they time lapse it. And he just has a dashboard cam. He's driving all across England. He gets to the channel, he gets on a ferry, he goes across the channel, he goes to France, he drives across France, and eventually he gets to Spain. And that's how far the next star is. It's somewhere in northern Spain.
Right.
I just think that's a hilarious perspective.
I think it was a similar thing where someone took a pea and they put it in the middle of a stadium. And they were like, if you want an idea of how far from the nucleus of an atom the electrons are,
Yeah.
you put the pea in the middle of the stadium. And if like you sit on the edge of the stadium and put another pea there, they're like,
Yeah.
that's how much an atom is just
A
space.
British physicist once explained, he says, imagine you have a pea on the floor of St. Paul's Cathedral and there's a moth flying around the dome somewhere.
Yeah.
That's the distance between the nucleus and an electron. That's the scale.
Right. I think we know the topic of your next Berenstain Bears science book.
Paul's Cathedral. Yes, the Berenstain Bears and the trouble with St. Paul's Cathedral. That's
I was thinking more the trouble with atomic distances, but
yeah, that's I think I got away with murder with Reach for the Stars. I don't think we're going to go with quantum physics now.
would just have to
Let
have like
me
actual factual
see.
like comforting sister who's like just like ugh.
Well, we don't. I'm not going to get into the double slit experiment. No.
He already brought
Quantum
robots to
duality is
life.
not quantum duality is not something I'm getting involved.
Hey, Frankenstein's really big these days, so maybe Actual Factual can get back into the whole robot
Oh,
thing.
I love Frankenstein. I recently just rewatched the original Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein. Forgot how good they are, just as visually.
And you forget how little the bride is actually in that movie.
Yeah, it's but she's great.
Yo, Elsa Lancaster? Yeah,
She's great.
That weird intro with Mary Shelley and Lord Byron
I
and
loved it. I forgot, totally forgot
yeah.
that. I think
Of course.
it's marvelous.
So, Mary, tell us
It's
about
not
this.
the astonishing thing about it, it's not that inaccurate. That's really pretty much what happened,
Yeah.
in this castle, and she made up this crazy story,
Right. Wonderful. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome. Thanks for talking about obscure cosmology, which is
That's
I
all I
think
want to
about
talk
talking.
about. Look, I spend most of my time just talking about the Berenstain Bears. It's nice to talk about something else.
Well, it's relevant because it'll make people interested in the Reach for the Stars book, and maybe somebody will actually buy it.
Hope so. I hope so. But thanks for joining me and good luck in all of your endeavors. I hope it's not this long until we get to talk again.
Whenever you want to talk, I'm available. As you see, I like to talk about irrelevant trivia, so.
Well, come up with something else that's irrelevant, and I
Yeah,
will talk
most
about
other
it.
people are much less tolerant of my irrelevant trivia than you are.
All right, well,
Thanks,
take it easy. Have a great rest of your day, and I'll talk to you soon.
bye-bye.
All right, bye. That was my interview with Mike Berenstain. Always wonderful having him on the show. Always wonderful going off on bizarre tangents with him. Always wonderful talking about the Bears, the creative process, yada, yada, yada. He's a delight. He's a delight to talk to. And I'm not saying that just because he might be listening to this. I'm saying that because it's true. Mike Berenstain, ladies and gentlemen, join me next week or I will be covering more Berenstain Bears goodness. We'll be talking more about the TV episodes. We'll be talking more about, I mean, basically TV episodes, because the books are slow in coming out right now. But thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening. And I will see you all next time deep in Bear Country.